A show that, analytically, exists between 6 and 10 weekday mornings on Kansas City's only FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
Oh, buddy.
Live from the studios that brought you.
Hey, what yo, man?
Here's Bob Fesco and Dusty Likens.
Well, good morning. Welcome in. It is 96.5 The Fan. Dusty off today. It is Mac and I. That is Mac Morey over there. I am Bob Fesco along with you this morning here on a beautiful, beautiful Tuesday morning in the Midwest, right? How about that crisp fall air this morning, Macadoodle?
Yes,
that was good, right?
Let's go.
I mean, my finally. Goodness, how beautiful was it outside today? And I walked outside. I opened that garage door. I stepped outside this morning, and I went, it is football season, baby.
Yes.
Driving in with the windows down. I didn't have the top off today. I should have had the top off today driving in
on
that.
Yeah, we're getting there now,
but
finally.
But also, you get all these rainstorms that kind of pop and show up in the middle of nowhere, so sometimes it's best to leave the roof on. But it is that crisp fall day out this morning. The kiddos are back to school. Everything is right in the world. I was having lunch with a friend yesterday, and I'm like, how you doing? I'm like, kids are back in school. He's like, makes a huge difference. I go, you have no idea the huge difference that the kids being back in school absolutely makes. And they left for school at 7 o'clock, didn't get home till 8 o'clock, so they're busy and it's wonderful and it's great. And
sports, all the extracurriculars, all that stuff.
Yes. yeah, like this is kind of the last week of calm before everything kind of gets going again.
Yep.
And you know, you're back into the fall sports and all that. Wishing everybody luck this year with whatever fall sports you're playing. I know they're getting going, and
yes,
football and you know, all that kind of stuff is, you know, on the horizon. And I'm excited for Olathe East this year. I think they're going to be fun to watch because they got a lot of good sophomores that are coming up, and when your daughter's a varsity cheerleader, you go to every game and you get to watch these kids. And I've been watching these kids since seventh grade, so I'm excited about
that's kind of fun.
Actually sixth grade, really.
Wow.
Yeah, the city champs, eighth grade year, one of the coolest football games I've ever been to.
Was
a middle school eighth grade football game, you know. And so I'm looking forward to that, but really looking forward to the Chiefs now because the weather is here. It's cracked a little bit, it's gotten a little bit cooler, and
come on,
Cyrus Allen continues to make plays. I mean, this dude continues to make plays up at training camp. He's making one-handed grabs, he's dragging his feet. I mean,
that was awesome.
I'm one of these guys.
Sideline awareness, man.
You got to show it to me, right? I've been around the block. I've seen a lot of training camp darlings. I've seen a lot of people out there that, you know, look good in underwear, as Spags likes to say, running around doing their thing. And then they put the pads on and you never hear from these guys again. You know, there's so many guys over the years, you know, that were like that. J.J. Moses immediately comes to mind. I don't mean to, you know, take a shot at him, but, you know, so many people out there that have come and gone over the years. You look at them in training camp, like, whoa, this guy's going to be good. This guy in the preseason is going to be really good. And then and you realize they're not really good. It's just like we're watching them play against nobodies. But I think
just play catch. Yeah, a lot of this is just like they're playing catch.
They are playing catch.
Shorts playing catch.
They are. That's exactly what they're doing. They're out here playing. They're out here playing catch. But this guy is just different, is what I'm getting at. I can watch this guy now. I've been covering training camp since 2001, for God's sakes, you know. And you watch these guys over the years, and you see, and you kind of go, all right, I've seen this before. I've seen this guy is different, and it's fun to watch him play. It is fun to watch him make those catches. And you mentioned sideline awareness. If you didn't tell me that was rookie fifth round draft pick Cyrus Allen, I would have said that's fifth-year player Odell Beckham Jr. for the Giants when he wore number 13, right? Like making those kind of plays. That was a veteran-style play that Cyrus Allen made along the sidelines. And so you're getting highlights like that from camp. The Chiefs, they know what they're doing with those highlights. They're outstanding. You're getting those highlights from camp. You're getting the cool weather kind of, you know, starting to break a little bit. And now it really is that time to kind of move things forward and say it is football season. It's time to get it going.
Yes.
Colleges are back in action and everything. And, you know, you got preseason game number two coming up this week. And so we've got ourselves a big type of situation where, you know, we can get excited and have some fun and do some good things because football season is finally here. So that is the good news today. The bad news is I don't think there is any bad news today. I don't think there is any bad news today.
We're good.
Yeah.
Even on a Tuesday, it's the worst day of the week.
I know.
We're still good.
Yep, it is. And so we're doing just fine. We're having a lot of fun today.
Yep.
And also, too, I don't know if you've noticed this today, but this is a big day. It's National Fajita Day,
Matt. Oh. Today is National Fajita Day.
And so I want to throw it out there to the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965, for you as well. We'll have this conversation throughout the morning. What is the best Mexican dish? on National Fajita Day. You get one Mexican dish to have.
Yeah.
What is the best one? Which one are you choosing and why? Now that's when you got to think about it a little bit, right?
So many.
There's so many great so many great dishes.
They're all fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm like, usually I'm a creature of habit and I get same thing a lot of time.
Of course.
But at Mexican restaurants, I switch it up every time because I know I'm going to like it no matter what.
Okay.
Chalupa, burrito, enchilada, quesadilla. I can do it all. But I've got a favorite.
We'll talk about it. The text line can weigh in as well here on National Fajita Day because it is pretty damn good. We're talking about football and we've got the betting odds out because people want to know who's going to be that first quarterback to be benched this year in the NFL. I think it's probably going to be Justin Fields. That's just kind of where I'm going. I think Patrick Mahomes earns that starting job by the time we get to the to the opener of this thing. But it's an interesting conversation because, again, we take Patrick Mahomes for granted, and you realize that nobody has thrown for 5,000 yards since Mahomes has done it in 2022, right? And people look at that and go, oh, we got to do this better, got to do that better. Mahomes is doing stuff that people have not yet done. You know, the 5,000 yards is an amazing number, right?
I think Herbert did it.
I just read something this morning that nobody's done it since Patrick Mahomes did it
in 2022. 2022. You're right, because he did it in 2022. You're right.
Since 2022.
Since 2022. You're right.
Patrick Mahomes is doing some pretty amazing things out there. So we don't have to worry about him being benched. But when you look around the NFL, there are some teams right now, I don't want to say they're one hit away from losing their quarterback, because everybody's one hit away, as we know, from losing their quarterback. They're one bad play away from going, all right, we got to get this guy out of here. And when you're talking about benching a quarterback, or if you have a quarterback competition, it's pretty clear you don't have an answer at the most important position on the field, and the rest of the stuff really doesn't matter. And I don't know how many true quarterback competitions there really are in the NFL this year. I know we have one in Atlanta that's probably going on. That's probably the biggest one.
Cleveland.
That everybody talks about. Cleveland. I don't even know, though, if that's a quarterback. I think it's Deshaun's job, Mac. I really do. I mean, I look at that, and I feel like everything that's coming out of Cleveland lends itself to say, it is Deshaun Watson's job, and they liked the way he played on Saturday. You know, he was like 11 of 15.
Yeah,
the coach thought he looked good. Statistically, it did. Yeah.
Yes, eye test was rough, but I mean, but if I told you, hey, Deshaun Watson's going to play all 17 games or he's going to get benched, which is more likely?
Oh, I would say probably get benched. Yeah, I think that's the case for a lot of quarterbacks, though, right now in the NFL. But I don't know, man. That's an interesting situation. I think he wins that job and maybe Shador's not even on the team and you just move away from that distraction. That's what I would do if I was Cleveland. If I'm picking Deshaun Watson to be my starting quarterback in Cleveland this year, I am not going to have Shador Sanders on the team. I am going to try to trade Shador Sanders or cut Shador Sanders because you've got Dylan Gabriel, right? And say what you want, backup quarterbacks, you know, it's tough to win games no matter who your backup quarterback is. But Dylan Gabriel at least provides you a kind of a sense of calm, because if you keep Deshaun Watson and Shador Sanders on your team in Cleveland this year, well, you're opening the door for everybody to be screaming after play one. And that's something, if you're a legitimate organization, you take away all the distractions, you remove all of that nonsense. And so keeping Shador Sanders and Deshaun Watson on the same team, I think, is a major recipe for a distraction all season long. And then when he starts playing bad, which he will, people will start screaming about Shador Sanders. Now, from our standpoint, an entertainment standpoint, our friends in Cleveland who do our job, it's a beautiful problem to have. It's wonderful for them and for the entertainment industry and all that. But if I were the coach of the Cleveland Browns, I'd be like, look, man, it's one or the other. One of these guys is my starter. The other guy is out of here. And that's the way that I would operate. And because Deshaun makes the money, I would probably lean towards Deshaun Watson. And he's done after this year anyway, I think, right? You can
Watson,
move on from him,
yes!
You know, after this season.
Yeah, hopefully out of the league.
That's what I'm
That'd
saying.
Be fantastic.
Yeah, yeah,
just definitely off the Browns.
Just move on from him this year. And so just go with it this year. Shador is probably not going to be your starter going forward. You're probably going to have to get a quarterback in the draft.
100%, which is a great quarterback draft to do it.
Exactly.
Supposedly.
Supposedly. Right.
Yeah, yeah,
supposedly.
Yeah,
we say this every year, and then it turns out to be like one guy.
Yes.
And so if you're the Browns, that's what I would do. And so when you look at the odds of who has the best opportunities to be benched, Deshaun Watson has the fifth best odds at plus 600. Tua has the best odds at plus 200. Who would you say is the guy you're picking?
Yeah, I would go Cousins or Watson. I mean, I think it's pretty clear, in my opinion, neither of them are going to play the full season. I would play Kirk Cousins as long as I could this year. I know that's becoming more and more of a conversation. I think Kyler Murray down there is actually kind of a fun combo. He's plus 800, so you can actually get some decent returns.
I thought about that, Mac.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, I hesitated on picking Kyler Murray because I was like, oh, yeah, Kyler Murray's my answer. But I also looked at who's your backup right now,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. It's nine.
And it's nine. Yeah. And so I think as bad as Kyler Murray is, I don't know that they're going to acquiesce and go to nine, because that was supposed to be a competition, and they ended that fast.
Yeah, well,
you know?
Yeah. When your wide receiver, the best wide receiver in football, wants Kyler Murray to come onto the team, and clearly wants him to throw him the ball, I think it's going to stay that way for a minute.
Yeah,
I just think the Kyler Murray thing. You know me, I'm hot on Kyler Murray. I'm hotter on the Vikings. I think it's going to go well, so I wouldn't make this bet.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to play well. I think he's a decent quarterback, better than he's probably talked about, and this is the best situation he's ever been in. But it's going to go one of two ways. It's going to go, oh, Kyler Murray's this year's Sam Darnold, this year's Daniel Jones, this year's, you know, name your reclamation project quarterback. Or it's going to go, okay, it's officially over. He's a backup QB. Let's see what we have left in J.J. McCarthy, if there's any juice worth the squeeze, and then we're done. I think it's one of two ways, so that's at least the bet with the odds. But, yeah, Cousins or Watson is really where it's at.
Cousins or Watson. See, I'm going Jacoby Brissett at plus 400. He has the fourth best odds to be benched in Arizona, because every time I turn something on NFL-related, they're talking about Carson Beck, man.
I love Carson Beck.
I hear about him a lot, and so that tells me that a lot of these folks that are watching this stuff and, you know, watch the All-22 and have a keen eye for this kind of thing, they like what they're seeing out of Carson Beck right now. And so I have to kind of look at that with a, you know, kind of a sideway view and go, huh, if everybody's kind of liking Carson Beck right now, remember Jacoby Brissett held out at the beginning of training camp and all that kind of stuff. He's not that good a quarterback anyway. I think he could be one. If things don't go great at the start in Arizona and he doesn't look like he's the part as that starting quarterback, why not see what you have in Carson Beck? Because you're in the same boat as Cleveland at this point in time. You're not playing for anything this year. You're playing for stuff in the future. And if you can play for stuff in the future and get a good look at Carson Beck, and maybe you stumbled upon a quarterback and you don't have to worry about a quarterback with a top five pick again this year, that's a great situation for Arizona to be in too.
Yeah, I'm with you on that part of it, on the let's see what we've got, and if we don't, we tank and we get somebody else, that sort of thing. But I will say, I mean, Brissett to me, like, he's this era's Ryan Fitzpatrick. Like, I don't think he's that bad. In 12 games last year, about 3,400 yards, 23 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, and completed 65% of his passes on the Cardinals. Like, he can throw it around. I think he gets a bad rap, but I think he's probably this era's Ryan Fitzpatrick, a really good backup and a starter who can win you a few games if he's on a decent team. He's not going to bring you to the playoffs. He's not going to put a team on his back, but he'll put together some numbers, and his preseason game was really, really good. But I agree with you. Carson Beck's was too.
Yeah, Carson Beck was really good. And so I'd like to see a little bit more out of him, and I think he can potentially challenge for some playing time later on this year. The worst odds to get benched, Patrick Mahomes at plus 3 million.
Yeah.
Something like that. Coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, a big day in LA sports that could have an impact on every team in professional sports. We'll tell you what happened next.
Good morning, Kansas City. It's Saquon Thornton, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
Again on 96.5 The Fan, it is Fesco and Dusty with you. Dusty off today, and Mac Morey is in as well here on 96.5 The Fan. Mac and Bob with you until 10 o'clock today.
Woo! Party time, baby. Party time. And you know, this year we partnered with KCUC, who is donating $50 to the Prostate Cancer Foundation for every home run the boys in blue hit this season. 1 in 8 men will face prostate cancer. Early detection saves lives at KCUC. Kansas City's largest, most experienced, and most advanced urology team. You see the best in KC. Schedule today at kcuc.com. $6,300 total this season, which means 126 home runs. 126 times they went yard, and they did it last night as well. Bobby Witt went yard last night, and Cags and Bobby Witt Jr. combined for 6 for 9, 5 runs, 5 RBIs.
There you go. Keep it going, right? Keep the young guys going.
Yes. Great combo, man.
Got to have it, right? Got to have it moving forward. I think this is kind of breaking news. I don't know if this is breaking news. I don't know if this is going to get steam later on today, but Roger Goodell was meeting with a German TV station, and he said, quote, at some point there will be NFL teams outside the USA. I have no doubt this will happen one day, Goodell said. And then they talked about the team in the foreign country and its home field could potentially host a Super Bowl. And so, you know, we've heard a lot about that and where we're going in the NFL. This is totally a sidebar to everything. I don't know how feasible, in my opinion, that is. And this is me being the old guy in the room. I don't know how this is going to work, but I just look at it. I go, if you're a football player right now in the NFL, do you really want a home base in Europe, right? I mean, that's the question that's going to have to be asked, and it's going to be really up to the Players Association to find out if that is something that they want to do. But I will say this. I am 1,000% against expansion in the NFL because I just don't think we have enough good players anymore. We can't continue to water down the product. We talk about it all the time in professional sports, right? You want to have the best players playing. And I think we have in baseball and in football, those are the two sports we have here. And I really can't speak educated enough about the NBA. But about baseball and football, we don't have enough talent for the teams that we currently have right now, let alone expanding and adding more. And when you add more teams, you continue to weaken the talent pool and continue to drive down, you know, all these guys that are going to get cut, right? Think about if there's more teams in the league. Those guys that teams are saying aren't good enough now are going to find jobs on teams, not because they're good, but because we need the players. And I just don't think expanding anywhere. Europe doesn't bother me anymore. I am so over that right now, but I am speaking from a player's perspective. If you're based in Germany and you got to commute to the United States nine times a year, like it makes no sense whatsoever to do something like that. You'd have to establish almost a European division for the NFL overseas to make it equitable as much as you possibly could for those players that are playing over there on those teams. But I just don't think the talent, Mac, is good enough. I mean, we're talking about all these quarterbacks in our last segment. We're going Jacoby Brissett and, you know, Tua and all of these guys that were kind of like, on. They would have to play if this league were to expand.
Yeah, Shador Sanders would have to start. Justin Fields would be somewhere. Chris Oladokun would maybe make it a look at somewhere. Yeah. Like, that's not what you want. You do not want to see this. You don't want to see Jack Cochran as someone's leading tackler for a team. European division, it doesn't even make sense to me. I think you can be European Football League that can sometimes play NFL teams in preseason or something like that. But yeah, I don't think it'll work. I know it's breaking news as far as him confirming that that's what he wants. But I think we've known that all along. This is where it's headed.
Right.
More and more international games. They are obviously trying to get their footing down more and more and more. But yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. I don't like the global expansion of the sport, and I think it's part of the over inundation that we've talked about for the last couple of years here.
Yeah, it's too much.
It
gets too much. I mean, you know, when something's good, you don't want to overdo it, right?
Yeah.
You always want to keep that want and that desire and that drive to have more, that addiction, if you will, right? And now with the NFL being played every single night, you're kind of like, it'll be there tomorrow. Maybe I don't need to watch it. It's not as special. And if you continue to add teams to this thing, I mean, I look around the league right now and I think all the teams that you would move to London have gotten new stadiums. You know, Buffalo's got their new stadium. Jacksonville's building, you know, renovating their stadium right now. There's really not a team. Carolina's getting a new stadium. There's really not a team that you look at and you can say, all right, we need to relocate this team out there. And so at 32 teams, you're probably talking about expansion, and you would probably have to expand to 36 and create a European division. And to me, that just doesn't make sense. It just waters down the product, and it becomes East Tonale State taking on Alabama potentially, you know, in one of those type of games, because the talent has been watered down so bad. And I'm not saying those European teams are going to be the one that's void of talent. Any team could potentially be void of talent, right?
Yeah, depending on how it goes and drafts and how much money people are willing to spend and trades and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, from the 417, maybe Goodell's banking on European talent filling the void. Look at what the NBA has done. Yeah, it's a perfect example, actually, because the NBA took years, decades of building leagues and building stuff outside of the United States to then bring them to the NBA, which is what made the NBA way better.
Yeah.
They are not going to the NBA or going to Europe with NBA teams. That's not what they're doing. They're expanding worldwide and bringing that talent to the United States. If that's what the NFL wants to do, absolutely.
Like, grow the game first at the grassroots level is what you're saying.
Yes, the game has not grown. Showing people once a year in Europe, You know, Germany, name your country wherever, name wherever you're going. Australia now, once a year, twice a year, that's not enough to really get talent to start playing the game. They're still all playing soccer. They're still all playing rugby. They're still all playing cricket way before they even touch an American football because they don't have a league there. They don't have a way to start. So you've got to now implement those things, again, from the grassroots, which the NBA has done a fantastic job since the 90s.
Right.
It's 30 years now they've really been working on this. So that's a lot of work that's done. And it's just not, hey, we're going to go there once a year and play a game.
Let me ask you this. And this just kind of hit me in the head, and some of the older folks out there may understand this a little bit better because we've been through this. You know, when I was in you know, middle school, grade school, we were always told soccer is going to be the next big thing in America. Mm-hmm. It really hasn't ever taken off to be the next big thing in America. Youth sports-wise, professionally, no. Is this what we're seeing in Europe? Is football in Europe the equivalent of soccer in the United States, where it's cool for us to get up and watch the EPL games and we'll root for stuff like that, and maybe overseas it's cool for them to stay up late and watch the NFL, you know, once in a while, but they're not really participating in the game and growing the game from a professional standpoint over there. This is, I mean, we're still in our infancy stages, I would think, in soccer in this country, right? I go back to the Kansas Hall of Fame induction and listening to Cliff Illig talk about the growth of soccer, you know, in the United States. And when they met with FIFA back in like 92 or whatever it was to get, you know, the original World Cup in the United States, they were talking about and said at that point in time, if we bring the World Cup to the United States, you need to establish a professional league in the United States. Yeah. That's why the MLS was born. The MLS wasn't born because we've loved soccer. It was born because FIFA said, we'll give you the World Cup if you start a league. That was 1994-ish when they started that, right? Back in the early 90s, they started that. And here we are in 2026, and that league still isn't, you know, where everybody thought it probably would be on the soccer standpoint. And so I think you're right, Mac. I think if the NFL wants to really get into Europe, and they're doing some stuff like this, but they need to do it more. They need to get in all the schools. They need to get all the kids playing and all that stuff, and then raise those kids as football fans.
Yes.
And then bring the NFL to them.
Yeah, and then eventually you'll have enough people actually knowing what the sport even is. I think a lot of people there still are like, oh, yeah, football's cool. We know the stars. We know Patrick Mahomes. We know Josh Allen. They're mega stars.
Kind of like us with soccer.
Yeah, us with soccer. We love Messi, but we're still asking what offside is.
We're the other 10 guys.
Yeah, we still don't know the rules, right? So I think that's probably the case over there with American football, whereas everyone in the world knows what basketball is. There's basketball courts everywhere. They've done the sport itself, not just the NBA, has been more global than football ever has.
Yeah, it really has been. I mean, you think about it. We've had European guys coming to the NBA for generations now.
Yes.
And look, I'll give the NBA a lot of credit, basketball a lot of credit. They figured it out. They grew that game internationally, and they've been doing it for a very long time. So the NFL is kind of behind the eight ball on all of that, but we'll see where it goes. Of course, Goodell, as we're talking about today, talking to a German TV station, saying he does see a day when the NFL has a team in Europe. Did you follow the family drama yesterday that's going on in Los Angeles with the Lakers and
crazy.
The Buss family and selling the team, and the guy who originally sold the team, this Mark Walter, owns like other sports entities, and he's selling all of them because he's getting investigated and he may owe some people money. And
he does.
And this may lead to the Dodgers getting sold. He's selling a European football team in the EPL. He's getting rid of the Lakers. And now, quite honestly, this Jeannie Buss situation where the Buss family tried to sell the remaining portions and she's saying, no,
she's like,
we're not selling. I mean, it is as family drama as you get, man. This is the Righteous Gemstones in real life, man.
It really is. It really is. It's nuts to watch. Yeah, if you haven't been keeping up with this, the Buss Shams reported yesterday that the Buss family was selling the remaining about 18%, and then a couple hours later, Jeannie and her lawyer come out and say, no, this isn't true.
You know who Jeannie Buss's lawyer is, by the way?
Who is it?
Barbara Streisand's son.
Really?
Yeah.
What? This is a TV show.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
yes.
Wow.
This is a made-for-TV event that's playing out in real life right in front of all of us. And it's glorious to watch. I mean, family drama, man. Sit back and watch and get the popcorn ready. Brothers and sisters are going at each other. And so what had happened yesterday is that the rest of the Buss family, there's six siblings, five of them voted to sell the remaining 17.8% of ownership to the folks who bought the Lakers last week from this Mark Walter, who's selling everything he owns because he owes everybody money, apparently.
Yeah, Mark Walter, yeah, negotiated the unfair TV contract deal, and he owes a bunch for the Dodgers, that is. And now he owes a bunch of money in loans and insurance stuff. And he's got to sell everything, or he could face criminal prosecution.
Yeah, this guy's in a bad way. Like,
yeah,
he's down bad. He's down in a bad way. He needs cash, so he's selling everything out there. So,
and he still doesn't have enough money after selling Chelsea and the Lakers.
Right, he still doesn't have enough, which means the Dodgers will probably be next.
Sold.
And it tells you, you know, and I heard from somebody yesterday, a source out in L.A. was telling me that this Jeannie Buss stuff and the way she's holding up now the sale may actually force him to have to sell the Dodgers because he needs more of this money that was coming in. And so the Buss family voted 5-1 to sell the remaining shares. Jeannie, the only one who didn't vote. She's the lead dog. She's the governor of the team. She claims that her vote overrides everybody else's vote because she's the lead dog on all of this. This is going to be a great kind of, you know, thing to watch out for, to kind of watch a great family drama that's playing out in the sports world right in front of us. But you had said something to me yesterday. You're like, man, I don't like the way this is going, not just for what's going on in LA, but this could have a major impact on all sports teams.
Yeah, my brother and I were talking yesterday. We were just talking about the danger that this could do to all of sports. Just we've discussed it here on the show, just becoming more and more corporate. I mean, and you've got the BlackRocks of the world trying to buy these sports teams. And eventually, you're not going to have any more Buss families. You're not going to have these actually the Hunt families. These those are going to start erode from sports. And that's what actually has made sports really, really great. And so now buying sports teams, if you've got a billionaire, with a B, that is, like Mark Walter, having to sell these teams just to get through his crap that he's done to himself.
Self-inflicted, yes.
Now, you have done this sport and the sports world in a bad way, because now you have made it, not forget the 1%, the 0.01% are going to be able to be a part of these teams, and I don't think they're going to be in it for the right reasons. In fact, I know they will not be. So I think this speaks to the danger that we could be seeing in the next 10, 20, 30 years as far as baseball, football, basketball, name your sport, could be seeing, especially, you know, soccer, forget it, Chelsea, all those sorts of things are going to be a part of this. Because, I mean, again, Mark Walter's having to sell the Lakers and the Chelsea, and he's now looking to sell the Dodgers at some point because he still doesn't have enough money. Now, that could speak in the short term to the good for Major League Baseball as far as the Dodgers maybe not becoming that super team, but who's going to buy them, you know? And now you've
got, that's the thing. Who can afford to buy them,
exactly,
right?
And you look at the people who just bought the Lakers and their political ties and things like that. I mean, you're now getting corporate politics. You're getting a new level of capitalism in sports that I don't think everyone's going to always love. I mean, you talk about just on a micro level, us getting priced out.
Yeah.
Us getting priced out.
I mean,
games.
The $2,100 for a family of four to go to a Buffalo Bills game this year is absolute blasphemy. It is pathetic.
Yes, and that's just
pathetic.
Going to keep growing.
And in a market like Buffalo, where it's a lot of blue collars, just
like
Kansas City, we all work paycheck to paycheck. $2,100 to take my family to a football game?
Not going to happen. So if it weren't for me being thankful to have this job in 5 years, I won't be able to go to a Chiefs game if it weren't for that, right?
Right.
So I can cover it. But that's the way I'm going to be
able
to get that stadium.
I just told Spectre the other day, I said, look, we got 4 years left with our season tickets. I don't know that we're ever going to be able to afford to have those in the new building.
I mean,
who knows what the ticket is going to cost? And so it's just sports is getting to the point, though, where it needs to be careful. Because if you outprice all of us as the casual fan, do you have a league? Because at the end of the day, yes, I know you make your money off the suites, and I know you make your money off the advertising and all of that kind of stuff, but you're able to make money off of that because fans are so passionate and they go to all of these games. And if sports gets to the point, man, where you're outpricing just the common American like all of us and we can't afford to go, you kind of move on and you kind of find something else. But $2,100, that's a ripoff to go to a Buffalo Bills game and watch them lose
asinine.
In the playoffs.
Asinine. Yeah, exactly. Well, but watch half of it depending on where you're sitting. Maybe you got a beam in front of you. But yeah, I mean, at some point this is going to, again, we're talking about over inundation in sports. At some point, yeah, we will end up being priced out if they're not careful. And you can't just expect people to keep showing up. We've got other stuff that we can do at
some
point. And sports has always been at some level about making money for the last, I mean,
forever,
probably forever, but at least for your lifetime, at least. And maybe if you want to go back 100 years, maybe it wasn't. But the last 70, 80, 90 years, I mean, it's been about making money to some level, right?
Yeah.
That's just in the natural way. Hey, this is a business. People are going to show up. We're going to put out a good product that people care about, just like any other business, right? And now it's becoming to the level where you're dealing with the top percents of the world, and the casual, the normal, the regular fan it isn't really on their priority list anymore.
No, it's not.
At all.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. The average fan is not a priority for these sports leagues. But it better get back to being a priority, because if you start outpricing everybody and nobody's going and nobody's paying attention, then you're not going to get the big boys to give you that money. It's a cyclical thing. And so the NFL and all these leagues do have to be careful to outprice all of us, because if they do, people are just going to move on. And I don't want to move on, because the last 5 years have been just absolutely awesome here in Kansas City for the Chiefs. I stumbled upon this yesterday. Over the last 5 years, the Chiefs are 12 games better than the second best team in the AFC West. Like, that is unbelievable domination. And that's having a 6-11 season last year, right? That's coming off of last year's 6-11 season. And this organization has been so good over the last 5 years that even with a year like last year, they still have a 12-game lead over the Chargers in the AFC West in the last 5 years when it comes to total record. And you look at that and you're like, that's two games a year plus better than everybody else in the division. So they're winning the division every year. They're not just winning the division, they're crushing the division every single year. And yeah, Denver's gotten better, obviously, and the Chargers are a nice regular season team. And so the division has gotten a little bit tougher for the Kansas City Chiefs, but that is utter domination right there. When you look at why this franchise has been good, it's because they take care of business, and they take care of business in a big way by just obliterating the competition. And as we get closer and closer to the start of this one, Mac, I'm starting to get the juices flowing a little bit. Like, we may see that domination again, like we were used to over the last 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's a battle for second. The Chargers 46 wins, the Broncos 44. Yeah. So that's really what it is. And you've got the Chiefs at 58 and then the Raiders, at 31. That's just, that's too bad.
Yeah. BBL stinky.
Yeah, and that's with the 6-11 season. You're right. It's utter domination, and we'll see it continue for the next 5 years. I truly believe that. It'll get a little closer. I think the Chargers and Broncos both are starting off this next 5-year stretch, if you're going to take it in increments of five, much better than they were at the beginning of this last increment.
Yeah.
But it's still going to be the Chiefs at the end of the day with the lead there.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think it's incredible how good they have been and how much they've dominated the competition. But that's Andy Reid, man. That's like when he came in here, the importance was the division. You got to take care of business in the division, win the division. You get into the playoffs, take care of your opponents inside the AFC West. And they feasted on that. I mean, it's incredible. It really, when you look at it, they don't lose those division games. Hardly ever do they lose those division games. And so that's where they've made their living. It's been the reason why they've been so successful. And I was looking at something yesterday with the Denver Broncos schedule. It was at the gym and they were going through the schedules on ESPN. There's a really good chance that the Denver Broncos start this season at 1-2 because they have the Chiefs in the opener, and then their third game is against the Rams. And so you could be looking at a potential 1-2 start for the Denver Broncos. I don't know who their second game is.
Jaguars.
Jags. I mean, you know, that's a heck of a game right there. That's a tough first three for the Denver Broncos. That's why I think it is so important, Mac, for this team to go out there and take care of business on opening night and get that win and put that pelt on the wall, because you're competing with the Broncos all season long. You punch them in the face on Monday night, they got to get up the next week and play Jacksonville, who was a playoff team. Then they've got to get ready to play the Rams, who a lot of people are saying are the best team in football. Those are the first three games for the Denver Broncos. Then the schedule gets a little bit easier for them as the year goes along. But those are three important games right there, and that's why that first game of the year is so vital for the Chiefs, not just to get off to a good start, but to take care of the Denver Broncos and maintain a one-game lead on the Denver Broncos for a good portion of this season and make them fight from behind.
Yeah, if you look at the schedules, both the Broncos and the Chargers start out way more difficult. The Chargers have two cupcakes to start the season, then they have, what, similar to the Chiefs, maybe the toughest seven-week stretch in all of the National Football League. But after that, their schedule gets much easier, whereas the Chiefs, that you mentioned, is much more backloaded. We have spoke to how imperative it is for the Chiefs to start hot, and it really, really is. Because you look at the Chiefs, I mean, yes, you've got the Broncos. We'll see about what the Colts are this season. They got the Seahawks somewhere in the middle of that early stretch. But in the start of November, Jets, Falcons, Cardinals, that's you got to go 3-0. You got to start out 3-1, and then by all of a sudden you're 6-2, 6-3 with a loss to the Seahawks, maybe a loss to the Chargers, and you are now multiple games ahead because the Chargers and the Broncos, to your mention, have a tough road to hoe to start their season.
They really do. I mean, it's an opportunity for the Chiefs, yes, to get like back to those days where we were crushing September. Remember, yes, those days,
oh, the best,
when the Chiefs would never lose in September, right before yes, last year. Get back to those days where you crush the month of September, you own September, you dominate in September, and then that carries you the rest of the way. That's why it's important to have a hot start. You can't win the division, obviously, in the first month of the season, but you sure as hell can lose it in the first month of the season, yep, and a hot start is everything. And if you don't get off to a hot start, it's really tough to kind of make up for it at the end. And so if the Chiefs can take care of business with the Broncos in that first game, bro, it's going to be so much better for everybody.
It's going to be massive, yes.
So much better. Coming up, he stole the day yesterday at training camp. We'll tell you who it was next.
Good morning, Kansas City. It's Jaden Caney, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
All right, back at it here, 96.5 The Fan, Bob Fesco and Mac Morey today. Dusty is off. He will be back tomorrow here on 96.5 The Fan. Coming up a little bit later on in the show, the second depth chart came out. I know Mac is champing at the bit to talk about it. And we'll also talk about coming up, you're going to get the opportunity to react to who you think is the most important player for fixing the offense this year. We'll discuss that coming up in 12 minutes, and I'm interested to see what everybody has to say, because I think, well, at least the two of us anyway, we're probably going to be a little bit different than each other, which is good. It opens it up for discussion. So, yep, who do you like? I like Mahomes. So do I. Okay, great. Next.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Okay. Sweet.
And sometimes the obvious answer is the right answer, right? Mm-hmm. It is Patrick Mahomes. Delane kind of stole the day yesterday doing his highlights, right?
Great.
I mean, we saw him against Rasheed really Rice. We saw him against Cyrus Allen. We saw him against, I want to say, Caldwell, was it maybe? Or
I don't know. I can't remember who
there
the third
was. There was three guys.
Yeah, three clips that were really circulating.
That were, you know, going around the interwebs yesterday. Cyrus Allen, Rashee Rice, and Nico Remigio were the three wide receivers that Delane was going up against in practice, and none of them caught a ball. I mean, his coverage was all over the place, and I mean, I don't know if they're penalties or anything like that or how the NFL is going to call it, but man, I was really impressed with what I saw out of him in those quick camp highlight videos. Now, they're highlights, obviously. You don't see every single play, but with a guy that was injured, a guy that's a rookie, a guy that's young, a guy that we're counting on as a top six pick, the highlights of him being in pads and ready to go, he looks the part right now, doesn't he?
No, he really does. I like him using his size. I like him being physical. That's the way Chiefs corners have played for the whole Spags era, even back to Bob Sutton, where they're very handsy. They like to be in your jersey, which at some point will bring the penalties, so he's going to have to watch that, but yeah, I think I love what I'm seeing so far. And if he is the number six overall pick, if he really is that good and he's an immediate impact guy, you're going to have two really, really solid starting corners in Noel Williams and Mansoor Delane.
Yeah.
And if Jaden Hicks if that first preseason game is any indication of what we're going to get out of Hicks, and I really like Alohi Gilman. Now, there's a clip of him getting absolutely burned by Travis Kelce. Which is so funny. You got NFL fans, not Chiefs fans, kind of being like, wow, Alohi Gilman, cut that guy. It's like, Travis Kelce's been doing this to every safety and every corner in the league for the last 15 years.
Dude, I've been telling people he's done this. I mean... for 15 years. Fake left, go right.
Yeah, exactly.
Every time, and nobody can figure it out.
That's such a good fake.
Alohi Gilman looked like he blew a tire, bro. It was bad.
It was so bad. And that's him at 36 years old. But either way, if both those guys, you got Gilman and you got Hicks playing like they're going to possibly be playing, I mean, that secondary, kind of been one of our worries, kind of been a topic over these last couple months, like, okay, how are they going to be able to perform? Well, I think we're seeing slowly but surely, okay, maybe this won't take as long as we thought it would.
Yeah, and that's why you let the process take its place, right? Yep. I mean, my wife always says this saying, stop borrowing trouble, right? And it's easier said than done, because that's what we do. We're humans. We worry like it's nobody's business, because that's what we're conditioned to do. We worry about things that we don't have control of. And then when things take place and we're like, oh, okay, it worked out the way it was supposed to work out, right? And that's kind of the way that training camp is going. That's why I don't get so worked up over somebody with the ones or any of this stuff in training camp. They're trying to figure things out. And when you have an operation like Andy Reid has had for 40 years in the NFL and been around these great coaches, he usually figures it out. And so that's what makes me excited about this, is because we're seeing not only Delaney doing good things, we're seeing him against Cyrus Allen and Rashee Rice, two of the better receivers now. And I think you can put Cyrus Allen on. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Yes, on our team.
On our team.
I think right now you can put Cyrus Allen into that category on our team. He wasn't doing it against guys that are going to be cut. You know?
No, I'm excited about that. I do want to see him do it against better competition.
Sure.
We don't have the best route runners in the league, or even, you know, in the division, or what you would say. You this preseason game, which we'll talk about later on the show, is the most important, and it's imperative to me, in my opinion, that he does play and goes and gets reps against Emeka Buka and those other guys.
Are they playing anybody though down there?
Yeah.
They are. Okay.
Yes, Baker Mayfield and those guys.
They're
will be
splitting
playing.
Time. Baker and the backup are 50-50 this
Jalen
week.
Daniels.
So Jalen Daniels, yeah, the Jayhawk, right, had a great game, and now all of a sudden, what? Hey, look, if you're Tampa, man, you got to figure out what's going on in the future, too. I mean, this is a year where you got to figure it out. Like, are we going to let Baker walk after this season? Are we going to pay Baker? Like, I think Tampa's pissed at Baker right now, and I think Baker's pissed at Tampa. He felt undervalued.
I think they're both justified.
And yes.
Yeah, they're both justified.
Both can be true.
Yeah.
Both can be. So when something like that happens, that may be a marriage that's kind of done. You know, maybe he's going to move on. And so maybe they want to see what they have in Daniels, if that's somebody that they can build around moving forward. Who the hell knows? He may turn out to be a better quarterback in the NFL than he ever was in college.
That'd be crazy.
That would be wild.
KU fans.
Oh, yeah. KU fans lose their mind over that. All right. Who's having a tough Tuesday, Mac, in your book today?
How about Shams? Shams yesterday reporting about the NBA and Jeannie Buss, as we just talked about, selling. And then, of course, that comes out later. Hey, this actually isn't happening. Here's Jeannie Buss saying no, and my lawyer saying no, we're not going to be doing that. We're not selling this 17.8% ownership. And then you've got the whole thing with him reporting, hey, by the way, it looks like ESPN's found out that no wrongdoings has been done by Steve Ballmer and the LA Clippers. He was not actually funneling any money to Kawhi Leonard. And then the NBA comes out and says, "Yeah, there's some erroneous stuff about these reportings, and we're still conducting our investigation, and there's actually a lot of inaccuracies in this report." 0-for-2 yesterday from Shams.
Yeah, I heard from a source out in LA again yesterday that I was talking to, and this person told me, they go, "This stuff in the NBA with Ballmer, I've been told this happens all the time. He just got brazen with it and wrote too big a check." They go, "This happens all the time in the NBA, and everybody just kind of looks the other way." And so maybe they're just looking the other way in the NBA because that's normally what they do. But this is going to be an interesting one to see how it plays out. ESPN defended Shams yesterday. "We stand behind our guy."
Yep.
Which was great. So now you got ESPN and the NBA fighting. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's good. No, I mean, this happened in New York for sure. I've mentioned that. But there's no way Jalen Brunson just took a $150 million pay cut. I guarantee you they're funneling money to Jalen Brunson.
Well, after talking to somebody who covers the league yesterday, and they're telling me, "Oh, yeah, we hear about this stuff all the time." I'm like, okay. Look, man, stop trying to think sports, and I'm talking to all of us, is altruistic. It is not. It is dirty.
It is, and I hope. But I do hope the league does something about this, and I hope they put a stop to a lot of that.
Well, they got to shut down everybody now, apparently, from doing this because, Jalen Brunson taking $150 million.
Oh, such a nice guy. Wow, how generous. Stop.
Nobody takes $150 million. Nobody takes a pay cut.
Yeah, exactly.
A $150 million pay cut out of the goodness of their heart.
No.
Yeah, so, just kind of
he's not a good guy.
No, it has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's not giving $150 million
no,
back.
Just so he can have OG Anunoby next to him.
Yeah, no, that's not happening. My tough Tuesday goes to Jordan Tyson of the Saints. Out 2 months now with a hamstring injury. This is a guy that a lot of people in Kansas City wanted. I don't know when we're going to see Jordan Tyson, a wide receiver with a hamstring injury, now already out 2 months. You're talking about Halloween probably before you even see him. We kind of dodged one there, guys, right? Not having a draft. Imagine if that was our guy. And that was the wide receiver one. You'd be losing your mind over there right now.
Yeah, I'd be so pissed.
You'd be sitting in a corner, sucking your thumb, rocking back and forth, claiming the season's over and cats are falling from the sky. But that sucks if you're New Orleans to have that guy have a hamstring injury. But whoo, we dodged one there here in Kansas City. tough Tuesday for Jordan Tyson, man.
Yeah, it was never about the talent. It was always about the injury history. 2022, torn ACL, MCL, PCL, 24, fractured collarbone, 25, sprained ankle, 2025, sprained hamstring, 2025, strained hamstring, 2026, strained hamstring. 2 months for that, man. And that's just something that'll never really go away. He's 6'3", 6'4". It's a big old hamstring that he's got. So
yeah.
It was never about the talent. He looked like a wide receiver one in those camp highlights. But, yep, this is why Brett Veach stayed away. So I apologize to you, Brett Veach. Good job.
Yep, you got to stay away from guys that are injured. Coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, he's the most important player for fixing the offense this year. And it ain't Patrick Mahomes. We'll tell you who it is next.
Kansas City, it's Omar Norman Lott. You're listening to Fesco and Dusky on your home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.